or an upcoming party. Emails from parents asking that she pick up groceries on her way home from school. Emails from her little brother, Emil. Those were the ones that he combed through the most carefully. Maybe he'd get lucky, and there'd be some hint in here about where Sophie was headed. On and on, Therian read, keeping an eye on the clock. He had to get in the water soon, but he kept reading, hunting for any clue or hint of where Sophie and her brother might have gone. He came up empty. Therian finished Sophie's inbox, checked the junk folder, and then finally the trash. It was mostly empty. He clicked open her sent folder and groaned at the tally. But he began reading again, click after click after click. His phone chimed with an alert. 30 minutes until he needed to get into the water. He could reach the airlock in 5 minutes if he walked fast. He could get through another few emails before then. Click, click, click. Therian's phone chimed again. 10 minutes. But he'd halted on an email dated 3 years ago. It was so simple, so nonsensical that it stood out. Subject, re Dusk's truth. The subject line was weird, but the body of her email was even weirder. Working on gaining access will take time. That was it. Therian scanned downward toward the original message that Sophie had replied to. It had been sent 2 weeks before her reply. From BanshiFan56, subject, Dusk's truth. Have you gotten inside yet? I want to know the full story. Therian scratched his head, opened another window, and searched for Dusk's truth. Nothing. No record of a movie or book or TV show. He did a search on the email system for the sender's name. BanshiFan56. Another half-deleted chain. This one originating from BanshiFan56. Subject, Project Thur. Could be useful to you. Read it. Sophie had replied, just did. I think it's a long shot, and the six will kill me for it. He had a good feeling he knew who the six referred to. The Asteri. But when Therian searched online for Project Thur, he found nothing. Only news reports on archaeological digs or art gallery exhibits featuring the ancient demigod. Interesting. There was one other email in the drafts folder. BanshiFan56 had written, when you find him, lie low in the place I told you about, where the weary souls find relief from their suffering in Lunathian. It's secure. A rendezvous spot? Therian scanned what Sophie had started to reply, but never sent. Thank you. I'll try to pass along the info to my... She'd never finished it. There were any number of ways that sentence could have ended. But Sophie must have needed a place where no one would think to look for her and her brother. If Sophie Renast had indeed survived the Hind, she might well have come here, to this very city, with the promise of a safe place to hide. But this stuff about Project Thur and Dusk's truth? He tucked those tidbits away for later. Therian opened a search field within Declan's program and typed in the sender's address. He started as the result came in. Danica Fendir. Therian burst from his office, sprinting through the glass corridors that revealed all manner of river life, mare and otters and fish, diving birds and water sprites, and the occasional winding sea serpent. He only had 3 minutes before he had to be in the water. Thankfully, the hatch into the pressurization chamber was open when he arrived, and Therian leapt in, slamming the round door behind him before punching the button beside it. He'd barely sealed the door when water flooded his feet, rushing into the chamber with a sigh. Therian sighed with it, slumping into the rising water and shucking off his pants, his body tingling as fins replaced skin and bone, his legs fusing, rippling with tiger-striped scales. He pulled off his shirt, shuddering into the scales that rippled along his arms and halfway up his torso. Talons curled off his fingers as Therian thrust them into his hair, slicking back the red strands. Fucking inconvenient. Therian glanced at the digital clock above the airlock door. He was free to return to human form now, but he liked to wait a good 5 minutes, just to make sure the transformation had been marked by the strange magic that guided the mare. It didn't matter that he could summon water from thin air. The shift only counted if he submerged completely in the currents of wild magic. Danica Fendir had known Sophie Renast, had swapped emails during a 6-month window leading up to Danica's death, all relating to something about Dusk's truth and this Project Thur, except that one detailing a secure spot. But had Danica Fendir known Emil as well? Had Emil been the person Sophie had meant to pass along the safe location info to? It was a stretch, but from what the River Queen had told him, everything Sophie had done before her death had been for her brother. Why wouldn't he be the person she was eager to hide, should she ever get him free from Kavala? The trouble now was finding them somewhere in this city, where the weary souls find relief from their suffering, apparently, whatever that meant. Therian waited until 5 minutes had passed, then reached up with a muscled arm to hit the release button beside the airlock door. Water drained out, clearing the chamber, and Therian remained seated, staring at his fins, waving idly in the air. He willed the change, and light shimmered along his legs, pain lancing down them as his fins split in two, revealing his naked body. His pants were soaked, but Therian didn't particularly care as he shoved his legs back into them. At least he hadn't been wearing shoes. He'd lost countless pairs thanks to close calls like this over the years. With a groan, he eased to his feet and opened the door once more. He donned one of the many navy windbreakers hanging from the wall for warmth, BCIU written in yellow print on the back, Blue Court Investigative Unit. It was technically part of Lunathian's auxiliary, but the River Queen liked to think of her realm as a separate entity. He checked his phone as he stalked down the hall toward his office, skimming the field reports that had come in. He went still at one of them. Maybe Ogenis was looking out for him. A kingfisher shifter had called in a report 3 hours ago, out in the Nelthian marshes, a small abandoned boat. Nothing unusual, but its registration had snagged his eye. It had made berth in Pangera. The rest of the report had Therian hurrying to his office. An adolescent-sized life vest with Bodegraven written on its back had been found in the boat. No one remained on board, but a scent lingered. Human, male, young. What were the odds that a life jacket from the same ship Sophie Renast's brother had been on had appeared on a wholly different boat near the very city the emails between her and Danica had indicated was safe to hide in? Emil Renast had to have been on that boat. The question was, did he have reason to suspect that his sister had survived the Hind? Were they currently en route to be reunited? Therian had a few guesses for where Danica's cryptic instructions might imply, none of them good. He might have no idea what his queen wanted with either Sophie or Emil, enough that she'd wanted the former alive or dead. But he had little choice in following this lead. He supposed he'd forfeited the right to choices long ago. Therian took a wave skimmer up the Istros, aiming for the marshland an hour north of the city. The river cut along the coast here, wending between the swaying, hissing reeds. Along one seemingly random curve, the small skiff had been driven up onto the grasses and now tilted precariously to one side. Birds swooped and soared overhead, and eyes monitored him unblinkingly from the grasses as he slowed the wave skimmer to examine the boat. He shuddered. The river beasts nested in these marshes. Even Therian had been careful about what watery paths he took through the grasses. The Sobeks might know better than to fuck with the mare, but a female beast would go down snapping for her young. A 13-year-old boy, however gifted, would be a rich dessert. Therion used his water magic to guide him right up to the boat, then hopped aboard. Empty cans of food and bottles of water clanked against each other with the impact of his landing. A sweep of the sleeping area below revealed a human male scent, along with blankets and more food. Small, muddy footprints marked the deck near the steering wheel. A child had indeed been on this boat. Had that child sailed from Pangaea all the way here alone? Pity and dread stirred in Therion's gut at all the abandoned trash. He turned on the engine and discovered plenty of fuel, indicating that the boat hadn't run out of first light and been ditched here. So this must have been an intentional landing, which suggested that Sophie must have passed that information about the meeting spot along to Emil after all. But if he'd discarded the boat here, in the heart of Sobek territory? Therion rubbed his jaw. He made a slow circle of the reeds around the boat, listening, scenting, and... fuck. Human blood. He braced himself for the worst as he approached a red-splattered section of reeds. His relief was short-lived. The smell was adult, but... that was an arm, ripped away from the body, which must have been dragged off. Trauma to the biceps in line with a Sobek bite. Fighting his roiling stomach, Therion crept closer, scented it again. It was fresher than the boy's scent on the boat by a day or so. And maybe it was a coincidence that there was a human arm here. But Therion knew the dark gray of the torn sleeve that remained on the arm. The patch of the golden sun bracketed by a gun and a blade, still half visible near the bite. The Ophian insignia. And the additional red sinking sun above it. Their elite lightfall squadron, led by Pippa Spetsos. Carefully, as silently as he could, Therion moved through the reeds, praying he didn't stumble into any Sobek nests. The human scents were more numerous here. Several males and a female, all adult, all coming from inland, not the water. Oh, Janice, had Pippa Spetsos herself led the unit here to get the boy? They must have tried to creep up on the boat from the reeds, and apparently, one of them had paid the ultimate price. Ophian had sent their best unit here, despite their numerous recent losses. They needed Lightfall in Pangaea, and yet they were expending resources on this hunt. So they likely weren't seeking the boy out of the goodness of their hearts. Had Emil abandoned the boat here not because Sophie had told him to, but because he'd sensed someone on his tail? Had he fled to this city not only to find his sister at the arranged spot, but also to get free of the rebels? Therion retraced his steps back to the boat, scanning it again. He slung himself below decks, pulling aside blankets and garbage, skimming, scanning. There, a marked-up map of the Valbaran coast, with these marshes circled. These marshes, and one other marking. Therion winced. If Emil Renast had fled on foot from here to Crescent City? He pulled out his phone and dialed one of his officers, ordered them to get to the marshes, to start at the boat and work their way by land toward the city, and bring guns, not just for the beasts in the reeds, but for the rebels who might be following the kid. And if they found Emil, he ordered the officer to track him for a while, see who he met up with, who the boy might lead them to. If the boy had even walked out of these marshes alive. Chapter 12. Hunt stretched out his legs, adjusting his wings so he didn't crush them between his back and the wooden bench. Bryce sat beside him, pistachio ice cream melting down the sides of her cone, and Hunt tried not to stare as she licked away each dribbling green droplet. Was this punishment for his fight with Pollux, to sit here and watch this? Hunt focused instead on the scooter she'd apparently ridden at breakneck speed to the Comitium. She'd walked with him when they left, though, pushing it beside her all the way to the park. He cleared his throat and asked, "Something up with your bike?" Bryce frowned. "It was making a weird noise earlier. Didn't seem wise to get back on it." She arched a brow. Want to be a gentleman and carry it home for me?
I'd rather carry you, but sure.
The scooter would be heavy, but nothing he couldn't deal with. He remembered his own ice cream, coffee, in time to lick away the melted bits. He tried not to note the way her eyes tracked each movement of his tongue.
What kind of noise was it making?
A kind of rasping sputter whenever I idled. She twisted to where her beloved bike leaned against a banner-adorned lamppost. It's gonna have to go into the shop, poor thing. Hunt chuckled.
I can bring it up to the roof and check it out.
So romantic. When do the wedding invites go out for you two? He laughed again.
I'm shocked Randall didn't make you learn how to fix your own bike.
Oh, he tried, but I was a legal adult by that point and didn't have to listen. She glanced at him sidelong. Seriously, though? You know how to fix a bike? Hunt's amusement slipped a notch.
Yeah, I know how to fix a lot of machines.
Does your lightning give you an affinity for knowing how they work or something?
Yeah.
Hunt trained his gaze upon the Istros. The relentless sun was finally setting, casting the river in reds and golds and oranges. Far below the surface, little lights glowed, all that showed of the mighty sprawling court beneath the water. He said quietly,
Sandriel took advantage of that. She often had me take apart Ophion's mech suits after battles, so I could learn how they worked, and then sabotage them before discreetly sending the machines back to the front for the rebels to use unwittingly.
He couldn't look at her, especially when she remained silent as he added, almost confessing.
I learned a lot about how machines work, how to make them not work, especially at key moments. A lot of people likely died because of that, because of me.
He'd tried convincing himself that what he did was justified, that the suits themselves were monstrous. 15 feet high and crafted of titanium, they were essentially exoskeletal armor that the human standing within could pilot as easily as moving their own body. Armed with 7-foot-long swords, some of them charged with first light, and massive guns, they could go head to maw with a wolf shifter and walk away intact. They were the human army's most valuable asset, and only way of withstanding a Vanir attack. Sandriel ordering him to take apart and mess with the suits had nothing to do with that, though. It had been about pure cruelty and sick amusement, stealing the suits, sabotaging them, and returning them with the humans none the wiser. It was about watching with glee as the pilots squared off against Vanir forces, only to find that their mech suits failed them. Bryce laid a hand on his knee.
I'm sorry she made you do that, Hunt.
So am I,
Hunt said, exhaling deeply, as if it could somehow cleanse his soul. Bryce seemed to sense his need to shift the subject, because she suddenly asked, What the hell are we going to do about Pollux and Baxian? She threw him a wry look, drawing him out of the past. Aside from pummeling them into tenderized meat. Hunt snorted, silently thanking Erd for bringing Bryce into his life.
We can only hope Celestina keeps them in line.
You don't sound so certain.
I spoke to her for 5 minutes before Pollux came in. It wasn't enough to make a judgment.
Isaiah and Naomi seemed to like her.
You talked to them?
On the way in. They're concerned about you. Hunt growled.
They should be concerned about those two psychopaths living here.
Hunt. The sun lit her eyes to a gold so brilliant it knocked the breath from him. She said, I know your history with Pollux. I understand why you reacted this way. But it can't happen again.
I know.
He licked his ice cream again.
The Asteri sent him here for a reason. Probably to rile me like this.
They told us to lie low. Why goad you out of doing so?
Maybe they changed their minds and want a public reason to arrest us.
We killed 2 archangels. They don't need any further charges to sign our death sentences.
Maybe they do. Maybe they worry we could get away with it if it went to trial. And a public trial would mean admitting our roles in Micah's and Sandriel's deaths.
I think the world could easily believe you killed an archangel.
but a whittly nobody half-human like me? That's the thing they don't want leaking out.
I guess, but I just have a hard time believing any of this. That Pollux and Baxian being here isn't a sign of shit about to go down. That Celestina might actually be a decent person. I've got more than 200 years of history telling me to be wary. I can't deprogram myself.
Hunt shut his eyes. A moment later, soft fingers tangled in his hair, idly brushing the strands. He nearly purred, but kept perfectly still as Bryce said, "We'll keep our guards up. But I think we might need to start believing in our good luck."
Ethan Holstrom's arrival is the exact opposite of that.
Bryce nudged him with a shoulder. He's not so bad. He cracked open an eye.
You've come around quickly on him.
I don't have time to hold grudges.
You're immortal now. I'd say you do.
She opened her mouth, but a bland male voice echoed through the park.
The gates will be closing in 10 minutes. Anyone not in line will not be granted access.
She scowled. I could have lived without them using the gates to broadcast announcements all day.
You're the one to blame for it, you know,
he said, mouth kicking up at one corner. Bryce sighed, but didn't argue. It was true. Since she'd used the crystal gates to contact Danica, it had awoken public interest in them and revived awareness that they could be used to speak throughout the city. They were now mostly used to make announcements, ranging from the opening and closing times at the tourist sites to the occasional recording of an imperial announcement from Rigelus himself. Hunt hated those the most.
This is Rigelus, bright hand of the Asteri. We honor the fallen dead in beautiful Lunathian, and thank those who fought for their service. And we watch all of them like hawks,
Hunt always thought, when he heard the droning voice that disguised the ancient being within the teenage fey body. The gate announcer fell quiet again, the gentle lapping of the Istros and whispering palm trees overhead filling the air once more. Bryce's gaze drifted across the river to the mist swirling on its opposite shore. She smiled sadly. Do you think Lahaba is over there?
I hope so.
He'd never stop being grateful for what the Fire Sprite had done. I miss her, she said quietly. Hunt slid an arm around her, tucking her into his side, savoring her warmth and offering his own.
Me too.
Bryce leaned her head against his shoulder. I know Pollux is a monster, and you have every reason in the world to want to kill him. But please don't do anything to make the governor punish you.
I couldn't.
Her voice caught, and Hunt's chest strained with it.
Watching Micah cut off your wings. I can't see that again, Hunt, or any other horror she might invent for you.
He ran a hand over her silken hair.
I shouldn't have lost control like that. I'm sorry.
You don't need to apologize. Not for this. Just be cautious.
I will.
She ate more of her ice cream, but didn't move. So Hunt did the same, careful not to drip into her hair. When they'd eaten it all, when the sun was near vanished and the first stars had appeared, Bryce straightened. We should go home. Ethan and Syrinx need dinner.
I'd suggest not telling Holstrom that you group him with your pet.
Bryce chuckled, pulling away, and it was all Hunt could do to not reach for her. He'd decided to hell with it all when Bryce stiffened, her attention fixed on something beyond his wings. Hunt whirled, hand going to the knife at his thigh. He swore. This was not an opponent he could fight against. No one could.
Let's go,
Hunt murmured, folding a wing around her as the black boat neared the quay. A reaper stood atop it, clothed and veiled in billowing black that hid all indication of whether the reaper was male or female, old or young. Such things did not matter to reapers. Hunt's blood chilled to ice as the oarless, rudderless boat drifted right to the quay, utterly at odds with the elegant banners and flowers adorning every part of this city. The boat halted as if invisible hands tied it to the concrete walkway. The Reaper stepped out, moving so fluidly it was as if it walked on air. Bryce trembled beside him. The city around them had gone quiet. Even the insects had ceased their humming. No wind stirred the palms lining the quay. The banners hanging from the lampposts had ceased their flapping. The ornate flower wreaths seemed to wither and brown. But a phantom breeze fluttered the Reaper's robes and trailing veil as it aimed for the small park beyond the quay and the streets past that. It did not look their way, did not halt. Reapers did not need to halt for anything, not even death. The Vanir might call themselves immortal, but they could die from trauma or sickness. Even the Asteri were killable. The Reapers, however? You could not kill what was already dead. The Reaper drifted by, silence rippling in its wake, and vanished into the city. Bryce braced her hands on her knees.
My sentiments exactly,
Hunt murmured. Reapers dwelled on every eternal isle in the world, the Bone Quarter here, the catacombs in the Eternal City, the Summerlands in Avalon, each of the sacred sleeping domains guarded by a fierce monarch. Hunt had never met the Underking of Lunathian, and hoped he never would. He had as little as possible to do with the Underking's Reapers, too. Half-lifes, people called them. Humans and Vanir who had once been alive, who had faced death and offered their souls to the Underking as his private guards and servants instead. The cost? To live forever, unaging and unkillable, but never again to be able to sleep, eat, fuck. Vanir did not mess with them.
Let's go, Bryce said, shaking off her shiver. I need more ice cream.
Hunt chuckled.
Fair enough.
He was about to turn them from the river when the roar of a wave skimmer's engine sounded. He turned toward it on training and instinct and halted when he marked the red-haired male atop it, the muscled arm that waved toward them. Not a friendly wave, but a frantic one.
Therian?
Bryce asked, seeing the direction of Hunt's focus as the mare male gunned for them, leaving roiling waves in his wake. It was the work of a moment to reach them, and Therian cut the engine and drifted for the quay, keeping well away from the black boat tied nearby.
Where the fuck have you been this summer?
Hunt asked, crossing his arms. But Therian said breathlessly to Bryce,
We need to talk.
How did you even find us? Bryce asked, as they rode the elevator in her apartment building minutes later.
Spymaster, remember? Therian grinned. I've got eyes everywhere.
He followed Bryce and Hunt into the apartment. Bryce's attention immediately shot to Ethan, who was exactly where she'd left him that morning, on the couch, Syrinx sprawled across his lap. His face had healed even more, the raw scar nearly vanished. Ethan straightened as Therian entered. Relax, she said, and didn't spare the wolf another glance as Hunt and Therian aimed for the couch. Bryce let out a warning hiss at the mare's still wet clothes. Hunt rolled his eyes and sat at the dining table instead.
This is why people shouldn't get white couches,
the angel grumbled, and Bryce scowled.
Then you can clean off the river water and dirt, she shot back.
That's what insta-clean spells are for.
Hunt replied smoothly. Bryce scowled. Domestic bliss, I see, Therian said. Bryce snickered, but Ethan asked from the couch,
Who are you?
Therian flashed him a smile.
None of your business.
But Ethan sniffed.
Mare. Oh, yeah, I know you. Captain whatever.
Kettos, Therian muttered. Hunt tipped his head to Ethan.
You've landed a grave blow to Captain Whatever's ego, Holstrom.
The gravest blow comes from my dearest friends failing to extol my many qualities when I'm challenged, Therian said, pouting.
Dearest friends?
Hunt asked, raising a brow. Prettiest friends, Therian said, blowing a kiss to Bryce. Bryce laughed and twisted away, putting her phone on silent before sending off a message to Rune.
Get over here, ASAP.
He replied instantly, What's wrong? Now. Whatever it was that Therion wanted with such urgency, Rune should know about it too. She wanted him to know about it, which was weird, yet nice. Bryce slid her phone into her back pocket as Therion gestured toward the neon pink lace bra dangling off the folding door to the laundry machines.
Hot, the mayor said. Don't get her started, Hunt muttered.
Bryce glared at him, but said to Therion, It's been a while. The mayor was as attractive as she remembered, perhaps more so, now that he was slightly disheveled and muddy.
We talking about your sex life, or the time since I've seen you?
Therion asked, glancing between her and Hunt. Hunt glowered, but Bryce smiled fiendishly. Therion went on, heedless of Hunt's ire.
It's been a busy summer.
He jumped onto a stool at the kitchen counter and patted the one beside him.
Sit, legs. Let's have a chat.
Bryce plopped next to him, hooking her feet on the bar below. Therion asked, suddenly serious,
Did Danica ever talk about someone named Sophie?
Ethan grunted in surprise. Bryce's mouth scrunched to the side.
Sophie, who?
Before she could ask more, Hunt demanded,
What the fuck is this about?
Therion said smoothly,
Just updating some old files.
Bryce drummed her fingers on the marble counter.
On Danica?
Therion shrugged.
Glamorous as my life may seem, Legs, there's a lot of grunt work behind the scenes.
He winked.
Though not the sort of grunting I'd like to do with you, of course.
Don't try to distract me with flirting, Bryce said. Why are you asking about Danica? And who the hell is Sophie? Therion sighed at the ceiling.
There's a cold case I'm working on, and Danica...
Don't lie to her, Therion,
Hunt growled. Lightning danced along his wings. A thrill shot through Bryce at it, not only the power, but knowing he had her back. She said to Therion, I'm not telling you shit until you give me more information. She jabbed a thumb toward Ethan. And neither is he, so don't even ask. Ethan only smiled slowly at the mayor, as if daring him to. Therion sized them all up. To his credit, he didn't back down. A muscle ticked in his cheek, though, as if he waged some inner debate. Then the mayor captain said,
I was assigned to look into a human woman, Sophie Renast. She was a rebel who was captured by the Hind 2 weeks ago, but Sophie was no ordinary human, and neither was her younger brother, Emile. Both he and Sophie pass as human, yet they possess full Thunderbird powers.
Bryce blew out a breath. Well, she hadn't been expecting that. Hunt said,
I thought Thunderbirds had been hunted to extinction by the Asteri.
Too dangerous and volatile to be allowed to live was the history they'd been spoon-fed at school. A grave threat to the Empire.
They're little more than myths now.
All true. Bryce remembered a starlight fancy horse called Thunderbird, a blue and white unicorn Pegasus who could wield all types of energy. She'd never gotten her hands on one, though she'd yearned to. But Therion went on.
Well, somehow, somewhere, one survived and bred. Emile was captured 3 years ago and sent to the Kavala death camp. His captors were unaware of what they'd grabbed, and he wisely kept his gifts hidden. Sophie went into Kavala and freed him. But from what I was told, Sophie was caught by the Hind before she reached safety. Emile got away, only to run from Ophion as well. It seems like he came this way, but various parties are still very interested in the powers he possesses. And Sophie too, if she survived.
No one survives the Hind,
Hunt said darkly.
Yeah, I know. But the chains attached to the lead blocks at the bottom of the ocean were empty, unlocked.
Seems like Sophie made it, or someone snatched her corpse. Bryce frowned. And the River Queen wants both the kid and Sophie?
Why? And what does this have to do with Danica? I don't know what my queen's ultimate goal is. All I know is that she's very keen on finding Sophie, alive or dead, and equally keen on attaining Emile. But despite what that suggests, she's not affiliated with Ophion in any way. Therion rubbed at his jaw. In the process of trying to figure out this clusterfuck, I found some emails between Sophie and Danica talking about a safe place in this city for Sophie to lie low, should she ever need it. That's not possible, Ethan said. Hunt rose from the table and stalked to Bryce's side. His power shimmered up her body, electrifying her very blood at his nearness.
Is the River Queen insane? Are you insane? Searching for rebels and not turning them in is a one-way ticket to crucifixion.
Therion held his stare. I don't really have a choice here. Orders are orders. He nodded to them. Clearly you guys know nothing about this. Do me a favor and don't mention it to anyone, okay? The mayor stood and turned toward the door. Bryce hopped off her stool and stepped into his path.
Oh, I don't think so.
She let a fraction of her starlight shine around her. You don't get to tell me that Danica was in contact with a known rebel and then waltz out of here. Therion chuckled, cold frosting his eyes.
Yeah, I do, Legs.
He took a blatantly challenging step toward her. Bryce held her ground, was surprised and delighted that Hunt let her fight this battle without interfering.
Do you even care that this oh-so-powerful Thunderbird is a kid who survived a fucking death camp and is now scared and alone?
Therion blinked, and she could have strangled him.
I know this is a dick thing to say, Ethan added, but if the kid's got that power, why didn't he use it to get out of Kavala himself? Maybe he doesn't know how to use it yet, Therion mused. Maybe he was too weak or tired, I don't know. But I'll see you guys later.
He made to step past Bryce. She blocked him again. Emile aside, Danica wasn't a rebel, and she didn't know anyone named Sophie Renast. Ethan said,
I agree.
Therion said firmly,
The email was linked to her.
And the email address was Banshee Fan 56. Danica was clearly a Banshees fan. Skim through any of her old social media profiles, and there are 10,000 references to her love of that band.
Solas. How many Banshees shirts and posters had Danica amassed over the years? Bryce had lost count.
Bryce tapped her foot, her blood at a steady simmer. Hadn't Philip Briggs said something similar when she and Hunt had interrogated the former leader of the Kerez rebel sect in his prison cell? That Danica was a rebel sympathizer? What did the emails say? Therion kept his mouth shut. Bryce bristled. What did the emails say? Therion snapped, a rare show of temper apparently getting the better of him.
Does Dusk's truth mean anything to you? What about Project Thur?
At her blank look, and Ethan's, the mayor said,
I thought so.
Bryce clenched her jaw hard enough to hurt. After this spring, she'd realized she hadn't known as much about Danica as she'd believed. But to add even more to that list, she tried not to let it sting. Therion took another challenging step toward the door, but Bryce said,
You can't drop all that information and expect me not to do anything, not to go looking for this kid.
Therion arched a brow.
So soft-hearted, but stay out of it, Legs.
No way,
Bryce countered. Hunt cut in.
Bryce, we were given an order by the Asteri, by Rigelus himself, to lie low.
Then obey them, Therion said. Bryce glared at the mayor. Then at Hunt. But Hunt said, storms in his eyes,
The Asteri will slaughter us, along with your entire family, if word reaches them that you're involved with rebel activity in any way. Even if it's just helping to find a lost kid.
Bryce opened her mouth, but Hunt pushed,
We won't get a trial, Bryce. Only an execution.
Therion crossed his arms. Exactly. So again, stay out of it, and I'll be on my way.
Before Bryce could snap her reply, the front door banged open, and Rune filled the doorway.
What the?
Oh, hey, Therian.
You invited him,
Therian accused Bryce. Bryce stayed silent, holding her ground.
What's going on?
Rune asked, glancing to Hunt and Ethan. Rune startled at the sight of the wolf.
And what's he doing here?
Ethan's a free agent right now, so he's staying with us, Bryce said, and at Rune's puzzled look, added, I'll fill you in later.
Rune asked, Why's your heart racing?
Bryce peered at her chest, half expecting her scar to be glowing. Mercifully, it lay dormant. Well, apparently Therian thinks Danica was involved with the rebels.
Rune gaped. Thanks, Bryce, Therian muttered.
Bryce threw him a saccharine smile and explained Therian's investigation to Rune.
Well?
Rune asked when she'd finished, his face drained of color.
Was Danica a rebel?
No, Bryce splayed her arms. Soulless. She was more interested in what junk food we had in our apartment.
That's not all she was interested in,
Rune corrected.
She stole the horn and hid it from you. Hid it on you. And all that shit with Briggs and the synth.
Okay, fine. But the rebel stuff? She never even talked about the war.
She would have known it'd endanger you, Therian suggested.
Hunt said to Therian,
And you're cool with being press-ganged into working on this shit?
His face remained paler than usual. Therian just crossed his long, muscular arms. Hunt went on, voice lowering.
It won't end well, Therian. Trust me on that. You're tangling in some dangerous shit.
Bryce avoided looking at the branded-out tattoo on Hunt's wrist. Therian's throat bobbed.
I'm sorry to have even come here. I know how you feel about this stuff, Athalar. You really think there's a chance Sophie is alive?
Rune asked.
Yes, Therian said. If she survived the Hind,
Hunt said,
and the Hind hears about it, she'll come running.
The Hind might already be headed this way, Therian said thickly. Regardless of Sophie, Emil and his powers remain a prize, or something to be wiped out once and for all. He dragged his long fingers through his dark red hair.
I know I'm dropping a bomb on you guys.
He winced at his unfortunate word choice, no doubt remembering what had happened last spring.
But I want to find this kid before anyone else.
And do what with him? Bryce asked. Hand him over to your queen?
He'd be safe beneath legs. It'd take a damn long while even for the Asteri to find him and kill him.
So he'd be used by your queen, like some kind of weaponized battery instead? Like hell am I going to let you do that?
Again, I don't know what she wants with Emil, but she wouldn't harm him, and you'd be wise to keep out of her path.
Ethan cut in before Bryce could start spitting venom.
You really think the kid is coming here? That the Hind will follow?
Hunt rubbed his jaw.
The 33rd hasn't heard anything about the Hind coming over, or Ophion being in the area.
Neither has the Ox, Rune confirmed. Well, unless one of the Marsh Sobek swam all the way across the Haldron to take a bite out of an Ophion soldier, I can't think of any other reason why I found dismembered body parts of one here,
Therian said. I don't even know where to begin with that,
Hunt said. Just trust me, Therian said. Ophion is on its way, if not already here. So, I need to know as much as possible, and as quickly as possible. Find Emil, and we potentially find Sophie.
And gain a nice child soldier, right?
Bryce said tightly. Therian turned pleading eyes on her.
Either the River Queen puts me in charge of hunting for them, or she assigns someone else, possibly someone less independently minded. I'd rather it be me who finds Emil.
Ethan burst out. Can we discuss that you guys are talking about rebels in this city? About Danica potentially being a rebel?
he snarled.
That's a serious fucking claim.
Sophie and Danica exchanged a number of intentionally vague emails, Therian said. Ones that included an allusion to a safe hiding place here in Lunathian, a place where the weary souls find relief from their suffering. I'm guessing the Bone Quarter, though I'm not sure even Danica would be so reckless as to send them there. But anyway, it's not a claim. It's a fact.
Ethan shook his head, but it was Hunt who said,
This is a lethal game, Therian. One I'd rather not play again.
Bryce could have sworn his hands shook slightly. This had to be dragging up the worst of his memories and fears. He'd been a rebel once. It had won him 200 years of servitude. And today had been long and weird, and she hadn't even told Hunt about Cormac's visit at lunch. But to let this boy be hunted by so many people, she couldn't sit by, not for an instant. So Bryce said,
I can ask Fury tomorrow if she knows anything about Danica and Sophie. Maybe she can give some insight into where Danica might have suggested hiding.
Ask her right now, Therian said with unusual seriousness.
It's Wednesday night. She and Juniper always have date night.
It was half a lie, and Hunt must have known it was for his sake, because his wing gently brushed over her shoulder. But Therian ordered,
Then interrupt it.
Don't you know anything about Fury Axtar?
Bryce waved a hand.
I'll call her tomorrow morning. She's always in a better mood after she and June get it on.
Therian glanced between her and Hunt, then to Rune and Ethan, both silently watching. The mayor reached into his jacket and pulled out a folded stack of papers with a resigned sigh.
Here's a sampling of the emails, he said, handing them to Bryce, and aimed for the door again.
He paused near Syrinx, then knelt down and petted his head, his thick neck. He straightened Syrinx's collar and earned a lick of thanks. Therian's mouth curled up at the corners as he stood.
Cool pet.
He opened the front door.
Don't put anything in writing. I'll be back around lunch tomorrow.
As soon as the mayor shut the door, Hunt said to Bryce,
Getting involved in this is a bad idea.
Rune said, I agree.
Bryce only clutched the papers tighter and turned to Ethan. This is the part where you say you agree to.
Ethan frowned deeply.
I can ignore the shit about Danica and Ophion, but there's a kid out there on the run who probably has nothing to do with Ophion and needs help.
Thank you, Bryce said, whirling on Hunt.
See?
It's Therian's business. Leave it alone, Bryce,
Hunt warned.
I don't even know why you had to ask about any of this.
I don't know why you wouldn't ask, Bryce challenged.
Hunt pushed.
Is this really about finding the kid? Or is it about learning something new about Danica?
Can't it be both?
Hunt slowly shook his head. Rune said, Let's think this through, Bryce, before deciding to act, and maybe burn those emails.
I've already decided, she announced. I'm going to find Emil.
And do what with him?
Hunt asked.
If the Asteri want him, you'd be harboring a rebel.
Bryce couldn't stop the light from shimmering around her.
He's 13 years old. He's not a rebel. The rebels just want him to be,
Hunt said quietly.
I saw kids his age walk onto battlefields, Bryce.
Rune nodded solemnly.
Ophion doesn't turn away fighters based on their age.
Ethan said,
That's despicable. I'm not saying it isn't,
Hunt countered.
But the Asteri won't care if he's 13 or 30, if he's a true rebel or not. You stand in their way, and they'll punish you.
Bryce opened her mouth, but a muscle flickered in his cheek, making the bruise there all the more noticeable. Guilt punched through her, warring with her ire.
I'll think about it, she conceded, and stalked for her bedroom.
She needed a breather before she said or did more than she meant to. A moment to process the information she'd gotten out of Therian. She hadn't put any stock in Briggs's claim about Danica and the rebels when he'd taunted her with it. He'd been trying to get at her in any way possible, but it seemed she'd been wrong. She scoured her memory for any detail as she washed away her makeup, then brushed her hair. Male voices rumbled from the other side of the door, but Bryce ignored them, changing into her pajamas. Her stomach gurgled. Was Emil hungry? He was a kid, alone in the world, having suffered in one of those godsforsaken camps, no family left. He had to be terrified, traumatized. She hoped Sophie was alive, not for any intel or amazing powers, but so Emil had someone left. Family who loved him for him, and not for being some all-powerful chosen one whose people had long ago been hunted to extinction. Bryce frowned in the mirror, then at the stack of papers Therian had handed her, the emails between Sophie and Danica, and a few between Sophie and Emil. The former were exactly as Therian had claimed, vague mentions of things. But Sophie and Emil's emails? I had to leave your sunball game before the end, Sophie had written in one exchange more than 3 years ago. But Mom told me you guys won. Congrats, you were amazing out there. Emil had replied, I was okay, missed two shots. Sophie had written back at 3 in the morning, as if she'd been up late studying or partying. I once had a game when I missed 10 shots, so you're doing way better than me, smiley face. The next morning, Emil had said, thanks, sis, miss you. Bryce swallowed hard. Such an ordinary exchange, proof of a normal, decent life. What had happened to them? How had he wound up in Kavala? Part of her didn't want to know, and yet. She read the emails again, the loving, casual exchange between siblings. Did any of the many people searching for Emil want to actually help him? Not use him, but just protect him? Maybe he and Sophie would find each other at that rendezvous spot Danica had mentioned. Maybe they'd get lucky, and no one would ever find them. Danica had always helped those who needed it, Bryce included. And during the spring attack, when Bryce had run to Asphodel Meadows, it was the same feeling creeping over her now. The boy needed help. She wouldn't walk away from it, couldn't walk away from it. But how did Danica factor into all of this? She needed to know. Her stomach protested again. Right, dinner. With a silent prayer to Cathona to keep Emil safe, Bryce emerged from the bedroom and said, I'm ordering pizza. Rune said, I'm in, as if he'd been invited, but Bryce glanced at the shut door to Hunt's bedroom. If she needed a moment, he'd sure as hell need a lot longer. Hunt turned on the shower with a shaking hand. The blast and splatter of the water provided much-needed white noise, a quieting barrier against the world beyond his bathroom. He'd muttered something about needing a shower and walked in here, not caring about what Dannon and Holstrom thought. Hunt peeled out of his battle suit, dimly aware of the bruises along his ribs and his face, the brawl with Pollux almost forgotten. He couldn't stop shaking. Couldn't stop the surge of acid through his veins that made every breath torturous. Fucking Therian, that stupid, arrogant asshole. Dragging Bryce into this. The River Queen might have no association with Ophion, but Emil was a rebel's brother. Danica had possibly been a rebel herself. It brought them far too close to Ophion's orbit. Of course Bryce wouldn't have been able to drop it once she'd heard. He knew it was irrational to be pissed at her about it, because part of why he adored her was that she was the kind of person who would want to help. But, fucking hell. Hunt sucked in a breath, stepping into the now warm stream, and clenched his jaw against the rising thunder in his blood and the memories that came with it. Those strategy meetings in Shahar's war tent, the bloody, screaming chaos of battle, his roar as Shahar died, a piece of his heart dying with her. The bolt of unrelenting pain as his wings were sawed off, tendon by tendon. Hunt sucked in another breath, wings twitching, as if in an echo of that pain. He couldn't let it happen again. If all of it had been for Bryce to get here, then it had happened so that he'd know when to walk away and keep her safe. But he hadn't been able to find those words. Hunt focused on his breathing, on the sensation of his feet against the slick tiles, the dribble of water down his wings. And couldn't help but think that warm water felt an awful lot like blood. 30 minutes later, they sat around the dining table, four boxes of pizza stacked before them. "Carnivore's delight," Bryce said with forced cheer to Hunt, sliding the meat-on-meat-on-meat pizza toward him. He offered a smile, but it didn't quite reach his eyes. She didn't ask about that haunted gleam, though, not with Rune and Ethan here. Not when Hunt had already made it pretty clear what was going through his head. They'd undoubtedly have it out the moment they were alone. "Carnivore's delight with extra sausage," she said to Ethan, winking as she handed over the box. She could have sworn Ethan blushed. "And pepperoni with grilled onions," she said to Rune. "What'd you get?" her brother asked, an attempt at normalcy after Therian's visit. Hunt and Ethan said at the same time, "Sausage and onion with extra cheese." Bryce laughed. "I don't know whether to be impressed or disturbed." But Ethan and Hunt didn't smile. She caught Rune's glance from across the table, and her brother said into her mind, "Ignoring all the shit with Therian and Emil, it's super fucking weird that Holstrom's here." She started on her pizza and sighed at the combination of meat and cheese and slightly sweet sauce. "I think it's super weird for him, too." Rune bit into his slice. "Honestly, don't flip the hell out, but you're technically a starborn princess, and now you're harboring an exiled wolf. I hate this political crap, but I wouldn't put it past Sabine to see this as an affront. The wolves are technically our allies." Bryce sipped from her beer. "It's not like he has any family left." Her heart ached. "Believe me, he is fucking miserable that he has nowhere else to go." "I can take him in," her brother spoke with utter sincerity. "Isn't that the same political bullshit?" "I can say that I'm hiring him to work for the Fae side of the Ox. Claim it's for a top secret investigation, which I suppose the stuff with Danica and Sophie and Emil is. Sabine can't get around that." "All right, but give him a few days. I don't want him to think I'm kicking him out."
"Why not? He was a dick to you."
"There were 5 years before that when we were close."
"So? He was a dick to you when you needed him most."
"And I shut him out when he needed me most."
Bryce blinked, finding Hunt and Ethan watching her in Rune. The angel drawled no hint of his previous haunted discomfort.
"Some might consider it rude to have a silent conversation in front of other people."
Ethan raised his hand in agreement. How he'd figured out what was going on, she could only attribute to his keen wolf's abilities, or his athlete's skill at reading opponents. Bryce stuck out her tongue.
"Sorry, you're not magical special fae like us."
"Here we go,"
Hunt said, diving into his slice.
"I was waiting for this day to come."
"What day?"
Ethan swigged from his beer. Hunt smirked.
"When Bryce realizes how truly obnoxious being a princess allows her to be."
Bryce flipped him off. "If I have to suffer through the title, then you have to suffer through the effects." Hunt opened his mouth, but Ethan said,
"I heard you had your ordeal that day this spring. Congrats."
Bryce went still.
Yeah, thanks.
She didn't want to think about it. The knock, Syrinx nearly drowning, the tank. Syrinx rubbed against her ankles as if sensing her distress. And Hunt, also reading it, said to Rune,
"You had your ordeal in Avalon, right? And now our new friend Cormac was there."
Before Rune could answer, Flynn and Deck strode into the apartment with a key Bryce definitely hadn't authorized. She whipped her head to Rune.
"You gave them fingerprint access and copies of my keys?" Flynn slid into the chair beside hers and pulled her pizza toward himself.
We took Rune's fingerprints when he was passed out during the summer solstice as a way into the system. Then Deck added ours alongside them.
Declan dropped into the chair beside Rune, taking one of her brother's slices and a beer from the bucket in the center of the table.
We made copies of the physical keys before he noticed they were gone.
You're really making me look good, you two,
Rune grumbled. Bryce shoved out a hand.
I'm changing my fingerprint system to something more secure. Give me that key.
Flynn only slid it into his pocket.
Come get it, baby cakes.
Hunt shot the Fey Lord a glare, and Declan snickered.
Careful, Flynn,
Deck warned. Ethan snorted, and the two males eyed him up. Of course they'd already noticed him. They were trained warriors, but they hadn't yet deigned to acknowledge him. Flynn flashed a charming smile full of teeth.
Hi, pup.
Ethan's fingers tightened into fists at the term.
Hey.
Declan gave a mirror grin to Flynn's.
Bryce needed a new pet.
Okay, Bryce cut in. Let's just say that we made 1,000 dog jokes about Ethan, and he made 1,000 fey asshole jokes about you two idiots, and now we all thoroughly hate each other, but we can be adults and eat our food.
I second that.
Hunt dug into his third slice, using his other hand to clink beers with Bryce. Flynn grinned again.
I thought I heard you ask Rune about his ordeal. It was our ordeal too, you know.
I know,
Bryce said, flicking her hair over her shoulder. But he won the prize sword, didn't he?
Ouch,
Flynn clutched his chest.
Cold be, Declan said.
Rune chuckled and leaned back in his seat, finishing off his beer before he said,
I was 27. Our father sent me to Avalon to check out the ladies. There was a fey female from a powerful family who the Autumn King wanted Rune to marry,
Flynn explained.
Unfortunately, Cormac wanted to marry her too. Neither married her in the end, of course.
Bryce groaned.
Please tell me all this tension between you two isn't over a girl.
Only partially,
Declan said.
It's also because Cormac and his twin cousins tried to kill us. Cormac literally put a sword through my gut.
He patted his rock-hard abs.
Aren't you Fey all allies?
Ethan asked, brows raised. Flynn nearly spat out his drink.
Valbaran Fey and Avalon Fey hate each other. The Avalon Fey are a bunch of backward assholes. Prince Cormac might be Rune's cousin, but he can drop dead for all we care. Strong family bonds, huh?
Hunt said. Flynn shrugged.
They deserved what happened during the ordeal.
Which was what, exactly?
Bryce asked.
Humiliation, Declan said with relish. A few weeks into our visit, King Morvan, Cormac's dad, ordered Rune to go see if he could retrieve the Star Sword from the caves. Tell the whole story, Deck. Why did he order me to do that?
Rune growled. Deck sheepishly grinned.
Because I bragged that you could.
Rune cracked open another beer.
And I made fun of Cormac for not having gone to retrieve it yet. And I said that one Valbaran Fey warrior was better than 10 from Avalon.
Bryce laughed.
So Uncle Morvan sent you off to teach you a lesson?
Yep, Flynn said. All three of us. We didn't realize until we were in the mist, the caves are literally full of it, that he also sent Cormac and the asshole twins to hunt us in there.
Starting blood feuds, Bryce said to Declan, raising her hand for a high five. Nice work. Declan clapped her hand, but Ethan asked,
So your ordeals happened then?
Yeah,
Rune said, face darkening.
We all got lost in the caves. There was some scary shit in there. Ghouls and wraiths, they were old and wicked. The six of us went from trying to kill each other to trying to stay alive. Long story short, Flynn and Deck and I wound up in these catacombs deep beneath the cave, surrounded by blood-sucking spirits who were going to eat our bodies, then our souls, Flynn added,
Or was it our souls, then our bodies?
Roon shook his head.
I got disarmed, so I looked in the sarcophagus in the center of the chamber where we were trapped, and there it was, the Star Sword. It was either die at the hands of those creatures, or die trying to pull that sword from its sheath.
He shrugged.
Thankfully, it worked,
Declan said.
Bastards ran screaming from the cave when Roon drew the sword, right to where Cormac and the twins were hunting us.
He grinned again.
The three of them had no choice but to flee back to their castle. King Morvan was not happy, especially when Roon returned with the Star Sword and told him to go fuck himself.
Bryce lifted her brows at her brother. He smiled, lip ring glinting.
Not such a loser after all, huh?
Bryce waved him off. Whatever. Flynn suddenly asked Ethan, gaze on his tattooed neck.
You gonna keep that ink?
Ethan drained his beer.
What's it to you?
Another charming grin.
Just wanna know when I can tell you that Sabine and Amelie are two of the worst fucking people in this city.
Ethan grunted, but a ghost of a smile appeared on his lips. Bryce glanced to Roon, who said into her mind,
might not be such a bad idea for him to come stay with us.
You really want to be roomies with a wolf?
Better than an angel.
Depends on what you're doing with that angel.
Gross, Bryce.
Bryce tuned back into the conversation, as Declan asked with a wicked smile that told her he was about to start shit.
So, who's sleeping where in this apartment tonight?
Bryce couldn't help glancing again at Hunt, who kept his face wholly neutral as he said,
I'm bunking with Bryce.
Bryce's mouth popped open, but Ethan said,
good, she snores.
Assholes, Bryce seethed. You can both go sleep on the roof.
Not enough distance from your snoring, Ethan said, smirking.
Bryce scowled, leaning down to pet Syrinx's velvety ears. Hunt only winked.
I'll get earplugs.
Chapter 13. Bryce barely slept. She was trying too hard to pretend that Hunt fucking Athalar was not sleeping beside her. The illusion was shattered every time she rolled over, got a face full of gray wings, and remembered that Hunt fucking Athalar was sleeping beside her. They hadn't spoken about Therian's visit, or about her decision to find Emile, so any fight on that front was likely still on the horizon. Naturally, Bryce woke up puffy-eyed, sweat-slicked, and with a pounding headache. Hunt was already up and making coffee, to guess by the sounds in the other room. Bryce slithered out of bed, earning a disgruntled yip from Syrinx at being disturbed. Her ringing phone aggravated her headache, and it didn't get any better when she glanced at the caller ID. She mustered her most chipper voice.
Hi, Mom.
Hello, Bryce.
Ember's voice was calm, too calm. Ethan smirked from the couch as she passed by, blindly walking toward the beckoning aroma of coffee.
Gods, she needed some.
Bryce asked her mom, what's up? You guys get home okay?
The wall of windows revealed a sunny day, witches and angels zooming by.
And, Bryce realized in the morning light, the fact that she was still wearing her worn t-shirt that said Nidaros Community Center Camp Summer 15,023, and little else. Oops. No wonder Ethan was smirking. Her lilac lace demi-thong left little to the imagination. Bryce stifled the urge to tug her shirt's hem over her half-bare ass. Hunt's eyes darkened, but he merely leaned against the counter and silently offered her a cup of coffee.
Oh, yes, Ember said. We got home, had plenty of time to do some grocery shopping and run a few errands.
Bryce put the phone on speaker and slid it onto the counter, backing away a few feet, like it was a grenade of compressed first light about to explode.
Great, Bryce said, and she could have sworn Hunt was trying not to laugh. We also had plenty of time, her mom went on, to answer all the phone calls that we began to get, asking when the wedding is.
Hunt took a long sip of his coffee. Ethan just watched with a befuddled expression.
Right, she hadn't told him.
Bryce gritted her teeth in an attempt at a smile.
You and Randall are renewing your vows?
Her mom fell silent. A wave building, cresting, about to break.
Is this engagement some scheme to prompt Hunt to finally confess his love for you?
Hunt choked on his coffee.
Oh, gods.
Bryce was half tempted to pour the boiling coffee over her head and melt into nothing.
For fuck's sake,
she hissed, snatching up her phone and taking it off speaker. Even if Hunt and Ethan, with their heightened hearing, could no doubt make out everything Ember said.
Look, it's not a real engagement. It certainly sounds like it is, Bryce Adelaide Quinlan.
Her mom's voice rose with each word.
And it sounds like you're engaged to the Crown Prince of Avalon. Do you know who his father is?
Mom, I'm not going to marry him.
Then why do so many of my former school friends know about it? Why are there photos of you two having a private meeting at your office yesterday?
Hunt's wings flared with alarm, and Bryce shook her head. Later, she tried to signal.
Cormac ambushed me. He did what?
In a non-physical way. Nothing I couldn't handle. And, she said as her mom began objecting,
I have zero intention of marrying Prince Creepster, but you gotta trust me to deal with it.
She gave Hunt a look as if to say, you too. Hunt nodded, getting it, drank some more coffee, like he needed it. Her mother, however, hissed,
Randall is in a panic.
Randall or you, because last I checked, Dad knows I can take care of myself. Bryce couldn't help the sharpness in her tone.
You're playing games with Fey Royals, who will outsmart you at every turn, who have likely anticipated your reticence.
Bryce's phone buzzed. She skimmed the incoming message. Thank Erd.
I appreciate your confidence, Mom.
I have to go. I've got an important meeting.
Don't you try to-
Mom? She couldn't stop herself, couldn't halt the roiling, rising power that made her body begin to shimmer, as if she were a pot boiling over with liquid starlight.
You don't get a say in what I do or don't do, and if you're smart, you'll stay the hell out of this.
Stunned silence from her mother, from Hunt and Ethan, too. The words kept flowing, though.
You have no fucking idea what I've been through, and faced, and what I'm now dealing with.
Her mom and Randall would never know about what she'd done to Micah. She couldn't risk it.
But let me tell you that handling this bogus engagement is nothing compared to that. So drop it.
Another pause. Then her mother said,
I knew you bundled us off at the break of dawn for a reason. I want to help you, Bryce. Thanks for the guilt trip,
Bryce said. She could practically see her mother stiffening.
Fine. We're still at your disposal should you need us, Your Highness.
Bryce started to answer, but her mother had hung up. She slowly, slowly closed her eyes. Hunt said into the sudden heavy quiet,
Cormac came by the archives.
Bryce opened her eyes.
Only to swing his dick around.
Hunt tensed, and Bryce added, not literally. His expression turned wary.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because I got a phone call from Celestina that you were in a holding cell.
She bared her teeth.
Spare me the territorial mail act, okay?
Hide shit from your parents all you want, but don't keep stuff from me. We're a team.
I just forgot. No big deal.
Hunt hesitated.
All right.
He lifted his hands.
Okay. Sorry.
Silence fell, and she became keenly aware of Ethan's attention.
Hunt can fill you in on my joyous news, she said, glancing at the clock. I do have a meeting, and I need to get dressed.
Hunt arched a brow, but Bryce offered no explanation as she aimed for her bedroom. She returned to the great room an hour later, showered and in work clothes. Hunt was already in his 33rd gear. Bryce said to Ethan, who was doing push-ups in front of the TV with extraordinary ease. I'll pop back in at lunch when Therian swings by. Help yourself to whatever's in the fridge, and call if you need anything.
Thanks, Mom,
Ethan said between reps, and Bryce stuck out her tongue. Bryce unlocked the door, then buckled Syrinx's leash before slipping into the hall. She'd been lonely in the archives yesterday without his company, and maybe a little jealous about the fact that Syrinx had spent the day with Ethan. And it would have been nice to watch him take a bite out of Prince Cormac's ass. The elevator had just arrived when Hunt appeared behind her, and every muscle in her body turned electric. Had the elevator always been this small? Had his wings gotten larger overnight?
Why are things so weird between us? Hunt asked.
Going right for the throat, then. Are things weird?
Don't play stupid. Come on. Last night was weird. Right now is fucking weird.
Bryce leaned against the wall. Sorry. Sorry. It was all she could think to say. Hunt asked carefully.
When were you going to tell me about Cormac dropping by the archives? What the fuck did he say?
That you and I are losers and he thinks I'm an immature brat.
Did he touch you?
Lightning skittered along Hunt's wings. The elevator lights guttered. The elevator reached the ground floor before she could answer, and they fell silent as they passed Marin, the doorman. The Ursine shifter waved goodbye. Only when they'd stepped onto the sizzling sidewalk did Bryce say, No, Cormac's just a creep. Seems like the city is full of them these days. She gestured to the sky above, the angels soaring toward the sprawling complex of the Comitium in the CBD. The decorations in Celestina's honor seemed to have multiplied overnight. No fights today, okay?
I'll try.
They reached the corner where Bryce would go right, Hunt to the left. I mean it, Hunt. No more fights. We need to keep a low profile. Especially now. They were too close to Ophion for comfort.
Fine. Only if you call me the moment Prince Asshole contacts you again.
I will. Let me know if Therian gets in touch, or if you pick up anything about... She glanced at the cameras mounted on the ornately decorated street lamps and buildings. She couldn't say Emile's name here. Hunt stiffened, wings tucking in.
We need to talk about that.
Shadows darkened his eyes, and her heart strained, knowing what memories caused them. But here it was, the discussion she'd been waiting for.
I know you want to help, and I commend you for it, Bryce. But I think we really need to weigh everything before we jump in.
She couldn't resist the impulse to squeeze his hand. Okay. His calluses brushed against her skin. Good point.
Therian threw me off last night,
he went on.
It dragged up a lot of old shit for me, and worries for you. But if you want to move forward with this, let's talk it through first.
Okay, she said again. But I'm still going to meet with Fury right now. She had too many questions not to meet with her.
Sure,
he said, though worry shone in his gaze.
Keep me updated.
He slid his hand from hers. And don't think we're done talking about this weirdness between us. By the time Bryce had opened her mouth to answer, Hunt had already launched skyward. Bryce slid onto a stool at the 8-seat counter that made up Tempest in a Teapot, her favorite tea bar in the city. Nestled on Ink Street, in the heart of the old square, most of the narrow graffiti-painted alley was quiet, most of the shops shut. Only the tea bar and the tiny bakery operating out of a window between two tattoo parlors were open. Come lunch, the many eateries would roll up their doors and set out the little tables and benches that crowded either side of the street. Once the lunch crowd returned to their offices, the street would quiet again until the after-work rush of people eager for a beer, a specialty cocktail, or more food. And sundown brought in a whole new crowd, drunk assholes.
Morning, Bee,
Juniper said, her curly hair pulled back into an elegant bun, brown skin glowing in the morning light. She stood alongside Fury, who'd perched herself on a bar stool and was scrolling through her phone.
Just wanted to say hi before practice.
Bryce kissed her friend on her silken cheek. Hi, you're gorgeous. I hate you. Juniper laughed.
You should see me when I'm dripping with sweat in an hour.
You'll still be gorgeous, Bryce said, and Fury nodded without taking her focus from her phone. Did you guys order? Yeah, Fury put away her phone. So, go ahead. Juniper said,
Mine's to go, though.
She tapped her navy dance bag, which was partially unzipped, the soft pink of her leotard peeking out. For a moment, Bryce allowed herself to look at her friend, really look at the beauty that was Juniper. Graceful and tall and thin, certainly not the wrong body type. What would it have been like to be heading into morning practice, to have a dance bag full of gear and not a purse full of random crap on her shoulder? Heels braced on the rail beneath the bar, Bryce couldn't stop her feet from twitching, arching, as if testing the strength and pliancy of point shoes. Bryce had known the high of performance well, had craved it those years in Nidaros, dancing with her small team at the rec hall. She'd been the best dancer in town, in their entire mountainous region. Then she'd come to Lunathian and learned what a fragile bubble she'd been living inside. And yeah, ultimately, she didn't think she could have lasted as long as Juniper, but seeing the fawn standing there, some small part of her wondered, yearned. Bryce swallowed, then sighed, clearing away the cobwebs of her old dreams. Dancing in Madame Kira's class twice a week was pleasure enough, and though Kira had once graced the stage of CCB herself until she'd decided to open a studio, the dancer-turned-instructor understood. So Bryce asked, What are you guys rehearsing today?
Marceline,
Juniper said, her eyes flickering.
But I don't have the lead.
Bryce's brows rose. I thought you were rehearsing for it these last weeks, Fury said tightly.
Apparently, Marceline's costume doesn't fit Juniper.
Bryce's mouth popped open.
Roles are often determined that way, Juniper said quickly, but I'm fine with soloist.
Bryce and Fury swapped a look. No, she wasn't. But after the disaster this spring, the CCB had put a hold on any new changes, including June's promotion from soloist to principal. Juniper had often wondered aloud over drinks or pastries whether that hold was because she'd been the only one in the bomb shelter to demand that they keep the doors open for humans to get in, had gone hoof to toe with some of their wealthiest patrons, thinking nothing of the consequences for her career. Of what it might mean for the first fawn to ever grace the stage of that theater, to curse out those patrons, to condemn them to their faces for their cowardice and selfishness. Well, this was what it meant for her. June